Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is the Best Ever You Show with Elizabeth Hamilton and Dr. Katie Eastman. And I don't know about you guys, but Katie, are you sick of Christmas cookies yet?
No.
I just had one more before we went on the air. I'm like, oh, gosh, somebody take a little Christmas cookie.
Well, you know why? Because I gave them all away. And now I'm like,
stinker.
Crap, I don't have any around. I really wish we had some.
Well, I'll bring you over a 10-pound plate. It'll, you know, I suppose, I have this theory lately. You know how you gain like 10, 20, I don't know, 40 pounds around the holidays? I'm not sure. But if you eat them fast enough, I can't tell if they count or not when it's Christmas cookies. I don't know. Anyway, whatever. I'm bringing Christmas cookies over to you later, so you can have them.
Oh, good. All right. Hey, we will.
You can have all the guilt. All the guilt that comes with the butter and the chocolate and everything. All right. Well, we've got a wonderful guest with us today. We have Lauren Henry, who is the founder of With a Brush of Love. And, Lauren, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It's absolutely my pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit before we went on the air, you know, some of the things to chat about and so forth. But I love it when guests go back a little bit in time to how they got to what they're doing today. So I wondered if maybe you could start with that. Like, you know, how did you end up doing what you're doing?
Well, you know, it's just that old adage that God laughs when you're making plans and kind of sets you in a slightly different direction if you're paying attention. So so I call this my happy accident, if you will. And long story short, I was teaching on the East Coast. I'm from the East Coast, and I was working out of the country as a cruise director for quite some time, and I would come home and be on hiatus, be on break for, you know, weeks to months at a time and get bored. And I really love kids, and I've always been involved in psychology in terms of my interests. I've always had an affinity for art and was always involved, you know, just loving children, being around children, et cetera, and so forth, working with children. So it was just kind of an ironic thing, but I come back and I was teaching in between my vacations. 9/11 happened, everything changed, and I continued to teach on and off for about 4 or 5 years on the East Coast in the Maryland and Virginia school districts, and a lot of kids were being mainstreamed and matriculated into classes from K through 6, you know, in the general classes. And as a teacher, where we know so many classes would become full of kids, you know, we were taking on more and more children, which kind of deflected from the ability to really focus on more independent, you know, support for the children that are already in your classes. The rooms were becoming chaotic. There was just so much going on that, frankly, as a teacher, it was hard to focus. It was hard for all these kids. It was creating more agitation just in general. So then these children are coming in and they have assistants, but the assistants aren't really set up for success. It was nobody's fault per se, but it was blaringly obvious to me that these kids that were being mainstreamed who weren't given any sort of real visual or environmental support. And the colors, the chaos in the room, the sound, everything was so overwhelming. And, you know, if you're familiar with kids on the spectrum in general, then you know that routine and consistency is so important. And the minute that would shift, it would make what was already hard more difficult for these kids. And so what would happen is they'd be separated. They'd be put into yet another room that is the opposite, where there's practically nothing but a chair, a desk, gray walls, you know, so isolating, and that would also create agitation. It was almost as if they were being punished, and they didn't do anything wrong. You know what I'm saying? So it started to really become, like I said earlier, blaringly apparent to me that environment was sorely ignored, and it was a very large, unintentional, of course, mistake that was causing and exacerbating a lot of issues that didn't need to be there. And that kind of set me on a, you know, on a different trail, if you will.
Lauren, is that for all special needs children or just children, or is that for just children diagnosed with autism?
Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to know, it sounds like what you guys, I wanted to go back for a minute and just have you describe what With a Brush of Love is. It seems that it's not just for autistic kids, but for special needs kids in general, too. What exactly do you do with their environments?
Well, let me start this way. I am a color expert and sensory design specialist, okay,
right.
If that kind of helps a little bit. Basically, what we focus on is transforming people's lives through their surroundings, creating surroundings or environments that support one's emotional need, regardless of what that is, because we all respond and react to our surroundings. It's just on a more subconscious level. Our focus is more with kids. It's our passion that are diagnosed on the spectrum, simply because they react so much more, you know, to the 10th degree, if you will, or the in terms of what I mean to say is like to the 10th power. They are very affected by their surroundings, and they can't express it verbally, and things come through their nervous system, their central nervous system, in a very different way. So if something excites them, if something upsets them, they react in ways that sometimes you can't tell which it is. And so rather than being able to say how they feel, they might do what's called stimming. They might flap their hands. They may jump up and down. They may turn in circles. They may scream. They may make sounds that people are not accustomed to. And they react because they walk into a space, and whether, as I said earlier, whether they're comfortable or they're not comfortable, they can't express which it is. And sometimes they might not be sure. They just know that it's a feeling that they need to get out of their body, if that makes sense. And so their surroundings are so important because it's what they react to immediately. And so having, as an example, a child in a space that you don't realize is causing them agitation, and actually what you're trying to do is keep them calm or make them happy by giving them something that you know that they typically like. If they say or they point to a color that they like and they jump up and down, or they're smiling, or they say to you, you know, I love this superhero. Well, a parent's reaction is, I just want him to be happy. You know, let's make life easy. So they overkill, and every single thing in the space is that color or that particular pattern or that particular superhero, whatever it is. And very often what parents don't realize is that what we like on a small scale doesn't always translate on a large scale, and it's not always
like
the best thing.
Yeah, it sounds like that
child
applies,
right,
even to just all kids in a way.
Well, that's the thing. It does. You know, what I do
less
is
more
for all people. You know, we work with all types of children, all types of individuals. It's just that it's our passion and our focus because it makes such an immediate difference, and it is so integral to their ability to develop and grow at a much more progressive rate and a much more successful rate. It makes a huge difference. This is not decorative in nature. This is fundamental. It has to do with the overall basic skeleton or backbone, if you will, just like you would in a house. You wouldn't start a house without a foundation. This is much more fundamental than parents and people in general tend to understand. And we want to empower parents, especially, to see that they don't have to feel helpless, that there is something they can do immediately that doesn't have to cost $1 billion per se, and do it at their rate of speed if that's how they want to do it in order to make a difference for their kids.
Super. Well, so for those of you just joining us, we're chatting for the next probably 45 minutes or so more with Lauren Henry, who is the founder of With a Brush of Love. You can visit her website at brushoflove.com and read all about all the wonderful things that you've done. In fact, you just published your first book called Unique Kids, Unique Surroundings. How's that going?
Thank you for that. Thanks for bringing that up. It's going really well. We published it last September, 2009, and it's been on Amazon, and we're getting some great feedback. It's more like a 60-page manual or guideline, very easy to understand, chock full of information that will allow a parent to go, you know, to a store or figure out by paying attention what's going on with their child, writing down information, journaling, looking for patterns, and then figuring out how to discern colors, plants, lighting, all the typical important things and elements that we need and we look to create in a space. You know, we look to use those particular elements, but how do we use those elements? How do we select for our particular child's needs or our needs as individuals? And that's what we teach and explain. How do we do multifunctional spaces? How do we create spaces for two siblings with different needs, especially if they're sharing a room? All of that kind of information is in the book.
Nice. Katie, I know you're on the edge of your seat, dying to ask something.
Well, so many things she said. Yes. I've had experiences with, you know, going back to the beginning of the conversation when you were talking about school and I hate labels. I have a doctorate in child psychology and I've learned them all, but I don't like them. And yet sometimes you have to use them. And just for clarification, a special needs child in a school, oftentimes there's a real difficulty with tracking what their needs are from grade to grade, from teacher to teacher, from aide to aide. And you spoke to that in the very beginning, you know, that these specially challenged children have these needs from square one. So I'm wondering, can you tell us more about ideas of what you've seen and how you're sharing that information as a child goes through a school system?
Yes, absolutely. And thank you for acknowledging that. And I agree with you absolutely across the board with the labels. I can't stand them either. I think sometimes they really can do a disservice because also so many kids that are labeled quote-unquote special needs are absolutely brilliant beyond measure.
Well,
that's exactly.
What I was going to chime in and say, too. I have this is probably not in any clinical book ever, but it's my own head. But I always say, you know, every kid has special needs. I mean, when I send my own child to school, you know, he's got needs. I mean, everybody has different needs. The teachers meet the needs is, you know, different for everybody. So I don't know. I don't like all those labels either, but, you know, whatever.
Well, the one way to eradicate the label is to simply understand that the term special needs applies to every person on the planet. There is no uniquely special needs, in my opinion, where somebody has a need and somebody else doesn't.
Yeah, exactly.
I was one of those kids that learned differently. And, you know, now we have the reason we have places like Sylvan's and all those types of schools that parents, you know, we pay for school to begin with, then we're supposed to pay for another school for our kids. And the only reason that is around is because these teachers are being trained in how to shift. That's it, meaning that there's more than one way to teach. And if all teachers were taught that from day one when they want, you know, are in school wanting to be educators, we could get rid of half of the problem. But you see, everyone says, oh, it will take too much time, it will take too much money, everyone learns differently. Well, the fact is, more often than not in you know, our classes, most kids don't learn the same. It's just that they learn how to compensate. And we don't always pick up on what they're doing to compensate till much later. If we would focus on natural strengths, not so much what are we weak in and let's focus on that, forget what we're weak in, because the fact is all of us have brilliant abilities and talents in areas that we end up discovering at some point, whether it's early on or later in life. And that's what we follow. And if we build on strengths from day one, it would be a very different scenario. And so
they
when I
learn what you're capable of at age 40.
Well, you know, I mean, that's the thing. It's like,
why discover it
and have to reveal it through trials and tribulations of what you're told you should know how to do and try to work on what you're not good at, rather than why don't we focus on what you're naturally brilliant at? And what these kids that are diagnosed, on the spectrum, what I want people to understand is, you know, it doesn't, I mean, I certainly get the death of the dream when a child is diagnosed and whatnot, because, you know, it's different than what we expect and anticipate. And that has to do with our ability to let go of the attachment of expectation, which, of course, is extremely hard. It's much easier said than done. But okay. If we allow ourselves to do that and let kids blossom at their own rate of speed without having so much expectation, it does allow for a much easier growth and evolution rather than the angst of what should be. And I'm certainly not saying there aren't milestones that need to be met. But going back to what Dr. Eastman was saying, you know, when I just worked with some kids that weren't on the spectrum or anything, they were kids that were basically, if you will, for lack of a better phrase, kind of dumped. You know, the kids that aren't raised with parents that are at home, they've seen things they shouldn't see, they're acting out, and nobody wants to deal with them. And they're in this school where there's not a lot of money, and they're the most incredible kids. And I don't say that to be, you know, to be politically correct or anything like that. These kids, they all have an edge, but the minute you give them that edge back and let them know that you're not going to just lay down for their, you know, attitude, that you actually care and you're going to stick around, they change in a heartbeat. They become these kids that are so desperate to learn and show you what they can do. They just want someone to stick around. And so all we did, because there wasn't much money, we went in, we talked to them, we got their opinions, we created a focus group of the kids, we changed some colors, and I said to them, you know, I laid out a choice. Rather than throwing everything at them and saying, you decide, I said, listen, here's the reason we're going to do this. Here's why we're choosing between these colors, and if, you know, you can make the selection as long as you choose between these colors. They were fine with that because there was somebody caring, and the minute we made the selection and we changed the color of the school, we haven't even done anything else we planned to do yet.
Yeah.
So much changed about their attitude and their behavior, and that's the same with any child. It just affects them in slightly different ways.
Go ahead. Well, I was just gonna say I have a really probably silly question, and pardon me if it is, but when you talked about color just there, are there any really hard and fast rules about colors that irritate, colors that soothe? I don't seem to be personally bothered by too many colors, but maybe I'm not in tune with it.
Well, I think that there are some basic things to keep in mind, but what I want to impress upon people is, you know, as an example, and I do this in some of my seminars and my workshops, when I mention the color red, you, Dr. Eastman, myself, and anyone who's listening all comes up with a different color in their head, a different version of that red. But we don't consciously think about that. We just think red. And, you know, you think of a red light or a red fire engine, whatever you think of. But the thing is, right, everybody comes up with a different shade or a different version, and that's what people don't understand. And so when you ask what the hard and fast rules are, I would say this. I would say if you have a child that's already, you know, considered more hyper, more energetic, more anxiety-ridden, you don't want to necessarily put bright primary orange, reds, or yellows, or what have you, you know, bright brights in their surroundings. You don't want to have fluorescent lighting ever, in my opinion, for any reason. But lighting hitting color makes a very big difference. The sheen of the color in a space, whether it's flat, whether it's shiny, you know, eggshell, all makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many things that people don't realize make a difference in terms of how one uses a color, how largely you use the color, on what kind of scale, what kind of shade, what you contrast it with. So I would just say, you know, consider the cooler colors. Blues and greens are always considered more calming as they, you know, they reflect the water, they reflect nature, which is of balance. Bright, bright colors, as I said, primary colors, bright lighting, not so great when you're trying to reduce anxiety, energy, activity, that kind of thing. Those are, I think, rather basic premises. Mm-hmm. And even the Home Depots and all of those types of places are starting to discuss paint colors being more tranquil and some being more energetic, but there is much more that goes into it, especially since I look at the space like a puzzle. I mean, we go down to the what's the material of the bedding made of, what's the furniture made of, what are the lines, are they sharp, are they smooth, where are the picture frames on the wall, what are the pictures of, how many, what are the frames made of. So we really go into every little specific detail to create the optimal picture for that client, including those who are just trying to improve productivity and things of that nature in their offices.
Now, I know, Katie, and also, you had a question about Christmas or something. We had talked yesterday a little bit about this interview.
I was thinking that when you're speaking to the challenges of living with some of these kids on a regular basis and how difficult that can be for their parents sometimes, and the and one thing that I think often gets overlooked is the parents taking care of themselves as well in their environment. And I know that one of the greatest impacts my organization once made was creating a space for a mom that was peaceful and calming and tranquil. It was a closet that we transformed. So she would have a, we called it a sacred space to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I would love to hear you speak to the adult part of this, and then I'll ask you about the Christmas question in a minute.
Well, I think that that's a very important, and just I'm so thrilled that you brought that up, because parents always get lost in the mix because the focus is always the kids. And
right.
I think that's part of why what we try to do for the kids is so important. You know, if they're not sleeping, the parents aren't sleeping. You know, so we want the whole household to thrive. And if the biggest issue gets solved, you know, partially, then everybody else's lives are better. But I want parents to consider also, rather than just saying, oh, you know, my room's not important or whatever color is fine, I want them to consider, like I was saying, as an example, I had one client who, she loved the color red, again with the red. She loved the color red, and she wanted it in her bedroom. And I kind of debated with her, because it's not that red can't go in the bedroom, but there are different types of reds, right? There's orange reds that are very bright and primary, like a fire engine. And then there are blue and purple reds that are much more warm and cozy. They're more like the burgundies and the brick kind of colors, maroons. And so something to consider, she wanted to put the bright red color in her room, and she did, and it looked festive. But after a few months, she was acknowledging to me, you know, I don't know why my husband and I argue, you know, about the kids and whatnot, but when we go into the bedroom, we seem to argue a lot more.
Yeah,
and
right.
I said to her, I know this is going to sound funny to you, but remember I told you about the red. She goes, but I love the red. I love when I go into my room. I said, I know you do. However, you're not realizing that particular type of red is very agitating. So what if we changed the red? Would you let me just change the red to a different type of red? So she gave in. It was kind of almost like a test, you know. We just changed the paint color to that purpley, you know, it was more of like a maroon red. And I added an accent wall of chocolate brown in the back. And she almost didn't want to talk to me. She couldn't believe it. She took like 2 or 3 weeks with her husband, called me back, and finally said, I can't believe that this is happening. But she said, we have not argued since literally you changed the color, you know, in the bedroom. When we go into the bedroom, everything changes. We just seem to just relax and get so much more peaceful. And I said, you know, I said, do you realize that the color was so agitating in comparison? And then I just put them next to each other, and she was astounded. People just don't realize that something as little as that can make a difference. And so it's important that your own space really supports you. I talk about it being like a personal assistant. Space needs to work for you, supporting you and making your goals and your in that particular space. It's there to make it function much better. So it should be like an assistant to you. And if you can't tell, that's partly what I try to teach people to do. Because sometimes you don't know the difference until you see the contrast. You know, you think everything's fine, and then we fix it, and you're like, oh my gosh, I had no idea.
You know, it's funny, when we moved into this house here in Maine, we walked in the house. We love the house and everything, but the whole lower level, our garage was painted three different shades of aqua.
Oh,
then
my.
You walk in, yeah, it's an oh my. And then it's still, that remains today, so I'll take pictures. Anyway, you walk in from the garage, and from there, the kitchen was this canary yellow, followed, and then it moved into the living room, which was painted this lime green, and then you moved into the office, which was painted periwinkle. And it was just wild. I'm like, well, who would paint like that? And the lady painted it that way specifically because she suffered from depression.
Ah.
And I'm like, wow, well, I don't. I got to mute it out because it's making me, what it did for me, I kept telling my husband. We left it that way for, when we moved here, my dad had strokes and things, so we couldn't really get at it for about a year and a half. But I would tell my husband, when I'm on the upper part of the house, I'm calm. When I come down to the middle part, it agitates the world out of me. It just bugs me. I can't sit down in the living room. I can't get comfortable in my kitchen. And it was because everything was just painted so fluorescent, funky. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was just weird. And to my eyes, it just bugged me. So, I mean, I think almost what you do applies to adults. Children, you know, there's a lot to be learned from what you're talking about, for sure.
Yeah, it applies to everybody. It's just, it's like I said, it's more of a subconscious thing for most people. And with the autism rate exponentially growing as it has, that's why that's our passion and our focus. But there's nobody that doesn't benefit from this. And I'm astounded at how shocked people are when we're able to make huge differences for them in their home.
Why, again, might be a silly question, but I'm not trained.
No questions are silly.
Well, sometimes they are, but that's okay. Why are autistic children specifically so affected by color? Do you know?
Well, they're so affected by their surroundings because their sensory Dr. Eastman can speak to this. They have a lot of sensory integration issues in general.
Right.
And so their senses and their input is shifted to a bit to begin with. And so when they see a light that, you know, is very bright, as an example, and you and I might say, oh, I've got to walk out of this room. It's just, you know, it's giving me a headache.
Right.
They walk into that room, and what they see is just, it's like a kaleidoscope of hysteria, of light. And it's so heightened because of some of their sensory integration issues, because of some of the ways they're affected, that it affects them to a degree that they, again, they can't express.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically taking what we would suck up and deal with and putting it at a much more visceral level, if you will. Dr. Eastman, can you speak to that to a more specific clinical?
Well, I mean, simplistically, sensory overload is really a lot of how you would put it. And that's why repetition and simplicity is so important to us autistic kids. And I think the best way for me to even come close, and it's only coming slightly close to how they feel, is when you walk into, like I went into a store the other day that is packed solid, full of people and stimulating colors, and I wanted to walk out. I almost felt panicky because it was just sensory overload. It's Chuck E. Cheese. That's the best example. Chuck E. Cheese. I go in there and I can't almost breathe because there's just so much stimulation. And where do you start? You know, you can't, it's like your body can't handle it all because it doesn't have the tools. So I always think of it that way, that there's sensory, that's just a really simplistic view of it.
Well, that's exactly what it is. I mean, exactly what it is. And that's a perfect example as well, that anyone will be affected. It's just that everybody's level of sensory overload, tolerance is different. And these
exactly.
kids are at a different level where they don't have much tolerance and everything. That's why they'll say, you know, I don't want to, they'll only eat certain foods that don't have certain textures, or they won't touch certain things, or they don't want certain types of fabric on their bodies because it feels too scratchy, too itchy, whatever it is. And it's a very real thing to a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes mm-hmm. we, as parents wanting to please, enable it, where really it just becomes habitual, and it's not so much that it's they can't, it's just they're used to it and they don't want to, and that's why it's important for parents to sort of learn the differences very early and really work with treating their children, quote-unquote, I hate this word, but normally or typically, and letting them be who they are naturally, not making it right or wrong, but also not forcing, you know, not forcing certain things, but also not allowing or enabling other things. And it is. It's a very delicate balance for every parent with every child. It's just mm-hmm. a little bit, it's a bit more, I think, tenuous with children that are diagnosed on the spectrum because we're still learning. And the diagnoses are never the same. This is very much a fingerprint type of scenario where every child is different and the way things manifest completely different, whether they be physical, emotional, mental, right, doctor?
Well, absolutely. And the other point, too, is that not every family has access to someone who can help them
right.
understand it
better.
Which is
why we put the book out. You know, we,
right.
We,
there's just
the
a whole lot of, especially if they're in a rural area, I
mm-hmm.
mean, there's a whole lot of need out there to have a book like that and to have a place to go and ask questions. Do you invite people to ask questions on your website?
Oh. Absolutely.
Yeah.
We have, we've been around for 8.5 years, but we've been evolving and changing everything. We just changed it, again, we have a blog on my website at brushoflove.com where we really invite and ask people to ask questions and interact with us. We have a fan page on Facebook, facebook.com/withabrushoflove, where we have a lot of interaction back and forth. Right now, from yesterday to the 26th, I even put out a video thanking everyone, and we want to offer it to your audience as well, where we're offering 50% off across the board all of our services from yesterday the 20th through the 26th, so that we can really try to make even a larger difference for people across the during the holiday season, and also showing gratitude for letting us come in and make a difference in their families and sharing their lives with us. We really want to empower parents so that they don't feel helpless and they see that there are basic ways that one can really make a difference and see a difference very quickly, reasonably, sometimes in days, weeks, or months, in their child's behavior, in the family unit as a whole. And there's nothing that can replace that. You know, when a family is working cohesively better, when a child is actually sleeping through the night for the first time. We worked with the military in Okinawa 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, and we were working with a soldier whose wife was pregnant. Their 2-year-old had just been diagnosed, and he never slept through the night, which means they never slept through the night. He hated the covers. He didn't like getting into bed. I mean, it was a whole issue. He had to go through an hour and a half routine every night with the toys to go to sleep. We came in, worked with the Marines over a weekend, ripped the whole space apart, and did the whole thing over, making it easy to replicate because, you know, they have to move quite often being in the military. Right. And the difference was amazing. We even have it on video on my website. You can see it. It says Okinawa Highlights. This little boy actually ran into his parents' arms for the first time. He always reacted mm-hmm. to hugs, but he never initiated mm-hmm. them. He got mm-hmm. into bed on his own. He couldn't wait. He pulled the covers over him. He was literally jumping up and down in excitement, clapping his hands as if to say, thank you for figuring it out. There are before and afters, but when you have parents say, you know, we were skeptical, but we had no idea, we had to literally wake our son up the next morning. He's been sleeping through the night every single day since. It's been getting better and better and better. We can't believe it. That is what makes me do what I do. It's so rewarding to change a family's life by making simple changes that when they come together, the effect is so significant. There's just nothing like that, and that is what parents can do.
Mm-hmm. So when we first crossed paths, Lauren, I remember, this was a while ago now, so it's vague, but I remember you sending me maybe pictures of maybe perhaps murals that you had painted for a children's hospital. Am I right or wrong?
There were, yeah, we've done some work for...
What was that exactly?
We've done some work for the National Children's Center in D.C. and the National Children's Medical Center in D.C. and also for St. Jude's Hospital. We were asked to basically go into the psychiatric intensive ward for Children's National Medical Center, mm-hmm. and basically redo 8 rooms that were all white rooms with these steel bars. I mean, I couldn't believe what I was seeing, considering it was for, you know, children with psychiatric issues. And so they wouldn't let us film anything up there, but we did very basic changes, which were overwhelming to these children. And then what we did we did murals downstairs in some of the more general areas for the hallways. And we also did some murals for St. Jude's for a $1 million endowment we were asked to do. I mean, really amazing opportunities. But sometimes people ask us to do things that emulate emotion that they want to create in a space and also reflect their personality on canvas, which we never expected. And so we've been commissioned to do a lot of art, and then we ended up doing 30 pieces for the James Gray Gallery at Bergamont Station in Santa Monica in 2007 for their 15th year anniversary. And we ended up exhibiting all of these paintings as well. So it was a very unexpected but very exciting scenario to now put some of the patterns and some of the emotional pieces and emotions that one feels on canvas. And that's where all of that kind of evolved from.
Does that
help answer your question?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And another neat thing that it looks like you've done is that you are on Extreme Makeover Home Edition and Kids Space. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that's really neat, too, that you get to do stuff like that.
Yeah, very exciting. For HGTV, we did a show called Kids Space, and we worked with two brothers in a very small space. One had Asperger's. And one didn't, and very different interests. And we have that on our site as well. And it was bringing them together. And the other, on Extreme Makeover, where I was a consultant, we worked with a family that had, she was a mother that had adopted 9 different special needs children, including those who were autistic. And she had this revolving thought process that as some of the children turned 18 and 21 and were off on their own, she would then readopt to always keep it at having 9 special needs children, this single woman in Newark, New Jersey. I mean, it was unbelievable. And at the time, it was the largest makeover that Extreme Makeover had pulled off in a weekend.
Yeah.
And so I consulted on that, which was so rewarding. And, you know, we had done an interview with Eduardo at the time, who was the landscape expert. And, you know, it was a tremendous thing to see it from the back end and be part of all these people making a difference and seeing how everybody really came together. And on HGTV, showing how a child who obsesses, you know, over or perseverates, I should say, over something specific, which many children on the spectrum do, this particular child perseverated on bridges. And so we ended up painting the bridge on the wall, surrounding the wall with colors and shapes, and then we made a bridge out of plain wood. We didn't paint the wood, and made it into puzzle pieces that fit together on the wall, so that the bridge was there 24/7. And then when it was time to go to sleep, we put the wood bridge on top of the painting so that now it was calming. There was no color, there were no shapes, but the outline of the bridge was still there and in the wood. But the great thing was that he and his brother could then take the wood during the day, the pieces off, and play with an actual bridge on the floor like a puzzle and also see the bridge in color and in lights on the wall. So it was always there, but we were able to create an opportunity for them to be calm at night, where the other brother
wasn't bothered by it, didn't have to look at it. It was just this plain wood. And the brother who with autism had the bridge in front of him at all times. So it was tangible. It was something that could interact with both brothers. And mm-hmm. it was consistent. That was the big piece that I wanted to show people, that there was a way to bring two different siblings together and still meet their needs.
Very important.
Katie. Very important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What do you, I'm going to go back to color for a little bit, skip around a little bit.
Because you mentioned Christmas too,
we wanted to talk about that. But I want to talk again just a little bit more about maybe some specific colors, whether they're agitating or calming. I think that just kind of black, you know, make it black and white for people a little bit. With the color yellow, I had always heard that the color yellow is universally agitating in a room. Somebody, when I started having children, and I have four children now, it's very funny. Somebody said, don't ever, I think it might have been my mom even, she said, don't ever paint a baby's room yellow, any shade of it. Have you ever heard of that before?
No. I hope not, because my whole house is yellow.
Yeah, I don't know. I heard that one time, that the color yellow is universally irritating. And don't ever paint a baby's room yellow. It makes them hyper.
Well, you see, here's the irony again. What they should be saying is it's the shade of yellow. When they say don't ever color a kid's room yellow, they're talking about the overall known color yellow, which is primary yellow.
Yeah.
That's bright yellow. That's why so many kitchens are always yellow. Oh, let's make it sunny. Not always the best color even for a kitchen. It's the shade of yellow. You know, if you want to use a pastel yellow, a lemon yellow, which is much more icy, or a chiffon, or it's really about the way one uses color as opposed to accent, and what shade and in what contrast. And it's just not as simple as saying yellow, green, blue, red. You know, because when we say those colors, everyone's thinking of the primary colors, right? What we're taught in school. And that's what people tend to forget, because, of course, it's certainly not what, you know, is the focus on an everyday basis. Hey, what color is my room? I mean, that's why we pick colors that we wear on certain days when we feel icky, when we're going into a meeting. You know, that's why they say women used to wear red power suits, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they used to say that red was, you know, that's how they felt confident, how we expressed our power was through a red power suit in the 80s. You know, there are reasons. It's just like when you go into a restaurant, there's no restaurant that is not designed for emotion. When you go into a restaurant that is much more expensive and the seats are cushier and the lighting is dimmer, they want you to sit. They want you to talk. They want you to order after dinner drinks. They don't want as much of a turnover. But if you go into a fast food restaurant, the chairs are harder.
Yellow.
The color, right? I mean, the colors are brighter. It's more... agitating, you know, you're supposed to sit there for 12.2 minutes and then get up and go. There's everything is organized in this subliminal fashion that people don't realize.
Now,
I was just going to say, the whole Barney phenomenon was, I remember being a child therapist, when you would go to court with kids or you'd do anything with a kid of that age, you'd always bring Barney, and Barney was just a really soothing figure because of his colors.
Purple.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. There was a lot of research put into what color would Barney be.
Mm-hmm.
And the children's therapists a lot used Barney for that reason.
And there's also sustainable energy, as opposed to either being agitating or being calming. You know, that type of purple also would allow for there still to be some sort of sustainable energy. It wasn't overly tranquil, and it wasn't overly agitating.
Well, that's
a
good word. Those are two very good words, sustainable energy. Maybe what does that mean for somebody listening who might not know what that means?
Are you talking to me or Dr.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sustainable energy.
Sustainable
so
energy
color,
is...
Yeah.
When you basically, like if you're in an office or you're working throughout the day, you don't want to be somewhere where you're agitated and you're, you know, you get fidgety, and you don't want to be somewhere where you're always feeling lethargic and ready to go to sleep, where it's overly tranquil or spa-like. You want a place that a color that allows you to feel awake, gives you some energy, and like food almost, sustainable energy throughout the day. It's not too much. It's not too little. It kind of feeds you throughout the day, so you feel good when you're in there. And it doesn't pull or detract from your focus or your concentration. So you're not having trouble. You're not competing with your surroundings to focus or concentrate.
Right.
And it's the surroundings aren't pulling from energy or sucking energy from you, making you or lethargic, or if you're already tired, adding to that. It's actually giving you some energy throughout the day without overly, again, it's acting like an assistant. It's supporting you.
Yeah.
Right.
So Katie, chocolate chip cookie wallpaper.
Yeah, that would be distracting. But I really, and I think you, yeah, right. You spoke to something really so interesting to me, and I think this is one of the gifts I've received from working with kids who have been challenged with senses, is it's really opened my eyes to the fact that the senses are, they're not unidimensional, and oftentimes we think one dimension, we think,
right,
or one aspect. We think color, and it's not just color, it's
mm-mm.
feel, it's taste, it's smell, and people don't recognize, I think, a lot of times, and I know I forget, that stimulates people as well, and smell.
That's what I was going to say, smell.
People.
Smell is like... Smell for me, because of my allergies and so forth, smell for me is more agitating than color. Perfume, like a perfume counter in a department store, something like that, where somebody can, like if you're in an office environment and somebody has on really strong perfume,
mm-hmm.
that can be very irritating.
Yeah, well, scent is a very big deal, and it can be a big deal on both ends. Like, I'm a scent freak, but I love scent. So I'm sensitive if I don't like something, obviously, very sensitive,
yes.
But I like scent around me at all times whenever possible, scents that I know feed me. Other people, it's not an issue, but that's a perfect example. Our olfactory glands, it's a very big deal. It's what makes you feel at home. It's what makes you think of terrible things and kicks off your emotional thought process from there. I mean, I could completely go off on total tangents about how it affects every avenue, but that's why all of these points that I make about creating one space from I work backwards. We look at the client's needs, goals, and functions. Then we look at the function of that space, the intentional function of that space. Is it multifunctional or, et cetera, or is it one function, et cetera, and so forth. And then we look at the aesthetic. We go about it from a very different perspective.
Yeah.
And that's why, I'll say that we even work or consult with interior designers because we do different things. It's similar to feng shui, but it's not, because we don't focus on the energy. But I do work with people that focus on scent. I work with feng shui people. I work with people that understand environment that can create, want to create space that supports these needs, whatever they are. But that's what makes what we do very, very different, and that it's fundamental that it's not coming from a decorative place. And I do want to just say to the therapists out there, behavioral, occupational, speech, et cetera, recreational therapists, that what we do never replaces the importance of what they're doing. What it does do is heighten the ability for what they're doing to work that much better. It's very important that parents and therapists alike don't think that we're replacing the importance of what they do, because we do very different things. But very often these therapies take place in the home or in the bedroom, and if those rooms are not built to support what those kids need, then their money's basically going up in flames. They're basically putting money in the fireplace, because they're asking a therapist to accomplish something in a space that is exacerbating the very problem they're trying to fix.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, no,
and
that
I
makes
want
sense.
People to understand that. It's important.
Okay, Katie, believe it or not, we only have like 10 minutes left, and we still haven't gotten to the Christmas question. Katie, go for it.
Yeah, I'm sitting here in my yellow house, but it's a nice color yellow, right?
No, your house is beautiful. That was not the shade of yellow I was thinking.
No. But it's also...
No.
way overstimulating right now with Christmas colors. And, you know, I think it's fascinating. And the fact of why those colors were selected many, many moons ago. But they are incredibly stimulating. And I'm wondering, I just am sitting here thinking, how many people out there listening have seen an increase in agitation in their homes? You know, some of it is the stress. But just, you know, these kids, I'm sure that we're talking about, a lot of them, that's something to really be aware of. If a kiddo who is specifically challenged in one of these ways is coming to your home, you know, get rid of the red. Or
Here's
talk to the parent and find out what this kiddo needs and doesn't like. But I can imagine if a child who was challenged in this way walked into my living room right now, it would be a nightmare, a disaster.
Here's the thing. You really can, this is what I want parents to understand. I know green and red is the traditional Christmas, you know, and Hanukkah is blue and white or blue and silver. But here's the irony, is that we don't have to live by these rules. And what is really important for people to know is you can create Christmas with the colors of your home. You don't have to do green and red. So if your living room, let's say, is yellow and brown, okay, you can wrap everything, you can put up a tree, you can get all sorts of decorations that are yellow, green, and brown, and it'll still look like Christmas.
In other words,
they don't have to be green and red. You can actually do beautiful ornaments in the same color of your home. You can use silvers and grays and whites in the same spaces. You don't have to use red and green. Everything doesn't have to be tinsel. You can, you know, paint sugar on, if you take your fruit and you take egg white and you paint it onto the fruit and then you put powdered or regular sugar on the fruit, it'll look like snow on the fruit.
Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah. And so all of these things, you can take pine cones and just spray paint gold or silver with the kids outside, because you don't want the smell to come into the house, and you have a little bit of pop. For the holiday, everything doesn't have to be red and green and gold.
Well,
and
the other thing too,
you know,
And the other thing you spoke to earlier is that, you know, nature and the colors and the shapes and they're very soothing.
Yeah.
And I think finding ways to bring nature into the home. Can you give us some examples of that and how
absolutely
that can help?
Go, you know, depending on where you live, even if you go to Michael's and spend $5, get twigs from outside, take them and put them in glass bowls that you can get at, you know, Big Lots or Targets for $3. Fill them with, you know, rocks or put some glue on the twigs and put some silver sparkle on them. Or get cranberries and all of that and put cranberries and apples in clear glasses. Get, again, from Michael's, you can get very, very cheap long twigs and long pieces of green that, you know, they're not real, but they look very real. And put them in tall glass containers that you can see through. It'll look so Christmassy. Fill another glass bowl with pine cones. There's just so many things that you can do without overstimulating. It'll look so festive and still be so soothing. You can actually get batting from Michael's. I'm giving you some of my best tips here that I've also learned from other people. I mean, they're not all me. I've learned from, you know, from other people too. We all put things together that work. And you can get batting. You can get white lights. That's another key, is all the lights don't have to be colorful. White lights are very elegant. They're very festive. And they don't create so much agitation in terms of greens and reds and, you know. So you can keep those colors perhaps outside the house. On the inside, if you put the white lights between some batting on a table, or if you put it up on the wall, it, first of all, if it's between like a bed sheet and some batting, it subdues the brilliance of the light, so it's not overwhelming, and it's very soft, and again, very elegant. But if you put white lights up, you can put some white lights up on the wall or on the tree. And also, the tree doesn't always have to be huge. What they're showing now is like three small Christmas, like little handheld trees that you can put up on shelves in your home that are easier to take down. You know, there's just so many different things you can do without making it so crazy chaotic. So just look at what's in your home. Take those colors that make you feel good in your home already and then play on that. And anything that's outside, if you have a garden outside, bring in those flowers and create a small little setting in between, and with a glass vase or what have you, you know, fresh cut flowers. But fruit is a huge thing that you can do during the holidays in terms of displays with any nuts that you put out. It's all how you lay it out with cranberries, and if you take oranges and put cloves all around them, it creates a great smell, and it also looks beautiful, and it's clearly holiday. Take some cinnamon sticks and put that out in a glass bowl. It's all how you present, but you really don't have to have the amount of green and red and the agitation that is, quote-unquote, the holiday season inside every space. I hope that helps, because I am very big on that for myself.
And I think those are good tips for any holiday, too, because, you know, Christmas rolls through or whatever holiday you celebrate, and then follows Valentine's Day with all the red, and then the Easter Bunny arrives. And, you know, it's all of the holidays all of the time. But I think that's really, really great information. And I wanted to, we only have a few minutes left, so I wanted to give people your website again. And, again, we've spent nearly an hour with Lauren Henry of With a Brush of Love. You can go to her website, brushoflove.com, or you can buy her book, Unique Kids, Unique Surroundings. It's available on Amazon or Borders, you know, anywhere where you would buy books.
It's on Amazon or our website. And you can also go to our
website also. Yeah.
Thank you.
And, Lauren, you're also an expert on Best Ever You, and we've loved having you on the site and look forward to all the great things that you're going to write for us and so forth over the next year. It's always a joy to have you on the site and be able to, you know, share your information with people. I have a really quick question. If someone is listening and they have just had their child diagnosed with autism, what do you think are some of the first steps, and either one of you can answer this, what are some of the first steps that you take? I know there's probably a panic that sets in a way. Where do you go from there?
Katie, do you want me to answer first, or you want to say something first?
Go ahead first, and then I'll pop in after.
I think the first thing to do, which is, of course, going to be hard, is try not to overly panic. And, that's the first thing. And once you find out what the issues are, I always tell people the first thing any parent should do, no matter how well they think they know their child, is to journal. Start noticing patterns. I think you should take a week, both parents, and individually journal what you're noticing about your child, so you're able to come up with patterns and start to see behaviors that you can start to acknowledge and work with immediately, rather than kind of panicking and jumping in out of kind of the nowhere land. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So you at least feel like you have a little bit of a grip on what is actually happening on a daily basis with your child that has been consistent.
That's really great information right there. I mean, just that one thing right there, just a place to start, is good. And I'm going to cut us short just a little bit because we only have one minute.
Dr. Eastman,
I
want to let me just pop in and say every state has a parent advocacy group.
Uh-huh.
Contact your state Medicaid office. Find out where it is for your state, but every state has a parent group that advocates and helps other parents.
Good.
I would say go there as well.
Okay. Well, Lauren, we sure have enjoyed you on our show, and we hope that you'll come back again because it feels like we could talk to you for another 3 or 4 hours with ease.
Absolutely, and it would be my pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Feel free to come on again because it's very informative information and I'm sure very, very helpful for parents in the world, not just across the country, but, you know, all across the world. So thank you so much, and we hope that you have a happy holiday. And thank you very much for being here
thank
today.
You both so much. Thank I really you. Appreciate the opportunity. And Dr. Eastman, thank you so much for your support and your knowledge, and please let me know if there's anything I can do to support you or help your clients as well.
Sure.
Okay,
thank
and for
you
everybody
so
listening,
much.
Yeah, we hope you join us again. We're at BestEverYou, blogtalkradio.com/BestEverYou, and you can also join our community at BestEverCommunity.com or visit us at BestEverYou.com, too. Lots of websites thrown out there. All right, thanks, everybody, and have a great day.
Take care.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.